Right. Way, way back, many centuries ago, not long after the Bible began, Jacob lived in the land of Canaan, a fine example of family man.
So
that's what I'm preaching on. Okay. My goals for this preach are that by the end of it, you will have a slightly better understanding of the story of Joseph and sort of that chunk of Genesis. And also, I'm hoping to help with the whole area of forgiveness in the long term. So that's my goals, that's what I'm aiming for. And you'll see at the end if I have them. So I've been given this preaching slot today in between two series, like Ian was saying, and I've sort of been given free rein to choose what I preach on, which is brave. I'm remembering my daughter's advice from last time I preached, which was to avoid heresy. So I prayed about what I should preach on, and I immediately thought of the passage right at the end of Genesis. It's Genesis 50, verse 20, if anyone wants to look at it with me. I'm going to be hopping around at the end of Genesis. And it says, "As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today." So that's my solid bit of text where I'm going to be talking around a little bit. A lot of you know I started LEAD recently, which is a Bible-based leadership course for anyone in any sort of leadership, either sort of work or church. In the last couple of years, I found myself leading a small group, and I take the youth out sometimes, and I've started preaching a little bit, so I thought it would be good to get some training that kind of makes me sensible. Excuse me. I also knew that Martin was doing LEAD, and I thought he might like a LEAD buddy, which is good. So when you sign up to LEAD, they give you a Bible reading plan, and the idea is that you read the whole Bible in 2 years of the course, the whole way through. I saw the first chunk of Bible reading was the Pentateuch, the first five books in the Bible, which I had to read by November, and I thought that that's I really struggled with Genesis. The last 20 years or so, I have mostly stuck to the New Testament in my Bible reading because it's a lot easier. It's easier to apply. It feels quite familiar. The Old Testament can be a bit trickier. So it's reading Genesis. I think I have expressed this to some of you. I've had moments of surprise reading Genesis. I have said to myself things like, "What? You said your wife was your sister and you let her go and live with another man? Twice?" And then, "Oh, so your wife actually was your sister." And also, "Gosh, you married your auntie." So it's just been moments through Genesis where I've just sort of gone... what I found quite helpful in this was to think about who the people in Genesis were and what their context was. The two things I thought is essentially if we go back like even 100 years in our history, certainly a couple of hundred or a thousand years, people's lives are so different. I mean, they're almost unrecognisable, their customs and habits. The people in Genesis, these thousands and thousands of years ago, such a long time ago. But also, the people in Genesis, a lot of the time, they're like a semi-nomadic desert dwelling or sheep herding people group. And even today, if we looked at a similar people group, their lives would be very different to ours. So thinking about who the people in Genesis were has helped me to just sort of hold it and not try and apply our common values, our sort of Western class. Wealthy values to their lives. So I've had to do that shift of things were different for a good reason. So the story of Joseph takes up a considerable chunk of Genesis. It's the last 15 chapters. And it's really important because it's the beginning of Israel as a nation. So Joseph's dad, Jacob, his other name is Israel, so he's Israel. And his 12 sons were the 12 tribes of Israel. So this is the beginning of the Jewish nation. I have to say, they're a pretty dodgy bunch, so if you can work with them, you can definitely work with you. So Jacob, and I'll do a little recap of Jacob. So Jacob had 12 sons. Do you remember this, Genesis 19-ish, somewhere? Jacob falls in love with Rachel. Rachel is beautiful, she's lovely, he wants to marry her. Her dad says, what if we just have a son with Rachel? So this bit I find tricky. I can't find an explanation that my mind is willing to think about. But on after his wedding night, Jacob discovers that he's not married Rachel. After. So on the morning after, he's like, it's Leah, it's not Rachel. And his father-in-law says, I thought you knew we always marry our oldest daughters at first. Work for me for another 7 years and you can have Rachel. And Jacob does, because he really loves Rachel. I do keep doing emotional wobbles just for them. So when he first saw Rachel in Genesis 29:11, he sees her for the first time. It says he kissed her and wept aloud, which apparently is what I'm going to do. In Genesis 29:17, it says Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance, and Jacob loved her. What I'm saying is he really, really loved Rachel. So poor Leah, the unloved wife, the older sister, was able to have lots of sons. She provided him with a lot of sons, and each time she hoped that he would love her. Rachel was not able to conceive for a long time, and there's a patch in the middle where Leah and Rachel both give Jacob their servant women as wives, and they also have some sons. So culturally, really quite foreign to us. Rachel eventually gives birth to Joseph, and Jacob is just smitten with him, loves him much more than his other sons. And then Rachel dies, giving birth to Jacob's last son, Benjamin, and it seems likely that Jacob will just love Joseph more because he reminds him of Rachel. So there's this really intense feeling that Jacob has for Joseph. So Joseph is this most loved, precious son of a powerful man. He's got a lot of sheep, Jacob, which was important at the time, a lot of sheep. His life was great. In the background, it says he was winding his brothers up, so he was telling tales on them, getting into trouble. He had a dream that they all bowed down to him, and they didn't. They were a bit, so much. And favouritism wasn't really obvious. So Jacob one day says, don't see how your brothers are doing out with the sheep. I love Joseph's response says, here I am, I will go. Off he trots. I find it really shocking that the first thing the brothers say is, here's Joseph, he's really known as killing. Let's go straight to murder. So it feels quite extreme. I guess they were probably chuntering amongst themselves for a really long time before they did this. So they jump on Joseph, they're going to kill him. Reuben says, hang on, how about we don't actually kill him, we'll just pop him in this pit over here and he'll just die on his own. But Reuben, it says, was intending to go back and rescue him, so he's at least going not murder. He goes off to look after his sheep, and some slave traders come along. None of this would have been legal or acceptable at the time. The brothers just decide to sell Joseph, just sell him, they get back to him with a coat then. So at any level, this is entirely wrong. We didn't have the legal right to do this. There was nothing about this was okay. So they go back, they, it's really sneaky, they take Joseph's coat, they dip it in some animal blood, and they go back to Jacob and say, please confirm that this is your son's coat, what we have found. And he's like, oh gosh, he's been killed by animals. And it says Jacob just says, I'm never going to stop breathing now. He's just very, very sad. You're getting the full range of my emotions today. I'm empathising with the Old Testament. So I'm going to sort of whip through Joseph's life. It's a lot of Bible, and I don't want to go too far over. So he's sold to the captain of Pharaoh's guards in Egypt, who's called Potiphar. For a while, things go pretty well. He's trusted, he works hard. And then Potiphar's wife takes a shine to Joseph and is constantly bothering him. Joseph says, no lady, no, absolutely not, no thank you. She does not take rejection well, and she makes up a story and says to Potiphar, Joseph's, attempted to sleep with me, and here's his loin cloth. The interesting thing that I read in a commentary was that if Potiphar had believed her, he would just kill Joseph straight away. He didn't understand him. It's very likely that he didn't believe his wife, and therefore, sort of to save her face and his reputation, he had to do something. So he threw Joseph into the imperial prison, which is described as a pit, so it's not attractive. Joseph's in prison for 2 years. He interprets the dreams of two of Pharaoh's servants correctly. He's in a trusted position in the prison. He's a hard worker. It's still described as a pit, so even though it's about as good as it could be, it's not good. The butler who Joseph interprets his dream correctly as being, you'll go back into favour with Pharaoh. Mm-hmm. So Pharaoh has some dreams. Do you remember it's the seven fat cows getting eaten by seven skinny cows? I can only think of Elvis and singing it in my head. This has been in my head for a long time. And then the seven sheaves of, ears of corn. The fat ones get eaten by the skinny ones, but the skinny ones stay skinny. So Pharaoh's really worried about this dream, really upset about it, and his butler eventually says, yeah, there's a guy in prison who can probably interpret it for you. So Joseph's brought up out of the pit. They have to give him a bath, a hair wash, a shave, put some clean clothes on him, so I think that sort of describes what state he's in. And things start to get better from here. So he listens to Pharaoh's dreams, he interprets them. With God's help, it's very clear it's with God's help. And he says to Pharaoh, you've got 7 years of plenty, during which time you need to gather the grain in, because then there's 7 years of famine, and if you've gathered the grain in good years, your people won't starve. And Pharaoh's really happy with this interpretation. So Joseph says, find someone reliable to oversee this. And Pharaoh says, well, you do it. So his life gets much, much better after that. He's trusted by Pharaoh. He does a really good job. It says sort of God was with him in everything he did. But what I just wanted to think about, so I said at the beginning we're going to be talking about forgiveness. So what had happened to Joseph? So he was 17 years old. Going to be a mention again. When his brothers tried to murder him, sold him into slavery. So Evan 16, maybe 17. So this is a young man. This is a really still quite vulnerable age. And he has all of this awful stuff. So the people who should absolutely be looking after him try and murder him, and then just sell him. So slave trading and people trafficking is not nice. It's not nice stuff. So Joseph's been through pretty very traumatic stuff. I'm, you know, I don't think they have PTSD then, but you just think that that's not going to leave you unaffected as a young man. So then he's 13 years, so he's 17 when he sold into slavery, he's 30 when he goes into Pharaoh's service. 13 years of this young man's life have just been stolen from him. He's been a slave, he's been in prison. And I was just thinking about what I was doing in those years. I went to university, I had a lot of fun, a lot of freedom. It's those really carefree years. I fell in love, I got married, I had some children. So lots of really important stuff happens in your late teens and twenties. And Joseph's were just spent as a slave in prison. That's really... I was just thinking, you know, if you start to actually think of these people as people and what that would feel like, it's a lot, isn't it? So when we come to the forgiveness bit, that's what we're talking about. It's not nothing, it's not you can't skip over it, it's this, that's what Joseph was going through. Okay. It does get better. Joseph gets married, has some children, it's all much, much better. I've just talked about my notes for a long period of time and struggling to find them again. Okay, so the next bit is Joseph's life is much better. Pharaoh likes him, he's very happy. His brothers, when the famine comes, are starving. It's all gone very badly wrong for. So in Egypt, because they'd saved the grain, there was a process by which people could lease their lands and their livestock to the government, and the government would give them food, and then after the famine's over, they could buy them back. So there was almost like a social security system. But Jacob and his sons over here were not Egyptian, they didn't have access to that. So they were sheep farming with no grain that had to feed the sheep. So Jacob says, go to Egypt and beg. Go, they've got grain, go and ask. So most of them go. There's this really like traumatic chunk in the middle where they go and beg for grain from Joseph, and Joseph recognises them and they don't recognise Joseph. And I was thinking, actually, at this point I think Joseph would have been about 40. So he comes out of prison at 30. They've had 7 years of plenty. Before the famine really starts to hit, that might have been another couple of years. So from a 17-year-old to a 40-year-old is a big difference, isn't it? So I'm not surprised that they don't recognise him. Joseph doesn't immediately let them off the hook. He wants to know if they've changed. So there's the bit where they say, well, there is another brother, there's Benjamin, but he couldn't come with us. And Joseph says, if your story is true, bring Benjamin. And they're like, Dad really likes Benjamin. So they go back, they leave one of the brothers as sort of as hostage, and they don't go and rescue him for like a couple of years. And then Jacob says, no, we really have no grain anymore, you're going to have to go back. And they say, well, if we go back, we'll take Benjamin. And Jacob says, my grief for Joseph was so strong, I can't let you take Benjamin. And the brothers say, we're all going to starve if we don't. So eventually, they take Benjamin back. There's that really, like, dramatic unveiling of Joseph revealing his identity to the brothers, and there's weeping and falling on each other's necks, which seems to be a thing. And that bit's good. So Joseph says, go and get, it's all fine, go and get Dad. Pharaoh says, your family can have some really nice land for their sheep. We'll feed you, it'll all be fine. So then Jacob and all of the everyone, it's quite a big family, and the flocks come back, and there's more weeping and more necks, and it's all good for that bit. Okay. So he's done a functional forgiveness. So it is he has let them off the hook. He's fed them, he's looked after them. But it was very much in a sort of testing way. It was quite a, it was a process. It wasn't just a kind of course. So there's a long patch then where everything is good. So I think the famine ends, the sheep farming goes really well, the Jacob and his family are prosperous, Joseph stays in Pharaoh's employment, it's all good. And then, so Jacob dies of extreme old age. And after, so he has the biggest, most fancy funeral. So it says the whole of the Egyptian court attended, and it was sort of a several week, it was a full on proper funeral for Jacob. It was really very respectful. Excuse me. So we're building up to my passage. So the passage that I'm interested in comes right at the end of the story. So Joseph's marriage with sons, his older brothers are like grandfathers at this point. So after the funeral, the brothers become quite anxious and they are worried that now Jacob left to hold Joseph back. Joseph still might take his revenge. They're very aware of what they did. And it's not unreasonable. They were absolutely beautiful. So there is this very real risk that without Dad there, Joseph is going to be like, excuse me. I'm definitely going to cry this bit. What I really love is the kindness in Joseph's response to them. It did make me cry when I first read it. I'd sort of struggled through Genesis, and I got to this end bit, and it's like, this is beautiful. So I'm going to read it to you. If you want to follow with me, it's Genesis 50, and it's 15 to 21. Excuse me. It's more just that I need to cough. I'm just trying not to. Okay, are we ready? So when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, oh yeah, actually, thank you. They said, it may be that Joseph will hate us and pay us back for all the evil that we did him. So they sent a message to Joseph saying, your father gave this command before he died. Say to Joseph, please forgive the transgressions of your brothers and their sin, because they did evil to you. And now, please forgive the transgressions of the servants of the God of your father. Thank you. Joseph wept when he spoke to him. His brothers also came and fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. But Joseph said to them, do not fear, am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring about that many should be kept alive as they are today. So do not fear, I will provide for you and your little ones. Thus he comforted them and spake kindly to them. And that's the bit that really got me. It's just that kind of, it wasn't just a functional forgiveness. At the end, he was doing everything he possibly can to reassure his men who'd just been awful to him and maybe haven't been that great in the next bit. And it's that kind of, it's the going the extra mile, it's trying to make them feel better. So one of the commentaries I read was saying that Joseph reassured them not just practically but theologically. So the reassurance he gave them was actually, God's used this. So even though you did those awful, awful things, God has used this. And it feels like a very thorough forgiveness. So I was thinking about why I love this bit so much, and I think it's because it's really Jesus-y. It just sounds a lot like Jesus. You can imagine it. So what's that phrase? Jesus is in the Old Testament, something like that. You see echoes, pre-echoes of Jesus in the Old Testament, and this feels like one of those bits. So Jesus taught a lot about forgiveness. The Old Testament was less forgiveness-based, quite revenge-based a lot of the time. but this bit feels quite Jesus-y. So it reminded me of it's the thoroughness of the forgiveness. So the bit at the end of the Gospels where Peter denies Jesus three times, and Jesus says to him, "Peter, do you love me?" and gives him three chances to take it back, to correct it. And that thorough sort of making someone feel better, that's what it reminds me of. So it is a bit tricky using Old Testament texts to support New Testament values, because they are very different times. So for Joseph, the forgiveness was a process. It wasn't like an immediate instant drop everything and forgive. It was a long process, and it was very much at the end of his life that he got to this point. So that's my first goal, is that we've talked about Joseph, you've got a better understanding, hopefully, and there's a few little details that you know you haven't got before, and I'm sort of familiar with that. The bit I want to say about forgiveness, I think I've got one like practical bit of advice. So my experience of forgiveness, I've been alive a while now. Some people have not been particularly nice to me over the years. So I was thinking about, there was a patch at work about probably 14 years ago now, I think some people remember it, but I was like really badly bullied. It was very unfair, it was very unprovoked. I can be nodding that this wasn't bad. This was sort of a sustained attempt to get me to resign by senior staff. It was really unpleasant. I had a year where I couldn't work, and I couldn't go back to my previous job because they were management. So, really distressing time. My back was also quite sore at this point, and I think it probably made it worse. Everything did get better. I got a new job that I'm still doing, and I love it. I had prayer. Maybe a couple of years after all of this for my back, and the girl that prayed for me sort of did some listening to God while she was praying for me, and she said, "I think you need to pray for your colleagues, people need to hear you." And I was like, I thought she was right. So what I did was, at that point I was driving to work three mornings a week, and I prayed on my way in. And so every morning, well, those three mornings a week, and I think it was about a year, it was a long time, I just prayed blessings on these two women. I prayed for their relationships, their families, their homes, when you're praying for someone a lot, you have to get a bit creative. I prayed a lot for these ladies. And in the end, I really enjoyed it, actually. It became not difficult. It was just, you know, it's a nice thing to do. It's like, what can I pray for today? I did keep an ear open to see if their lives had got significantly better. I'm not sure if it changed that much. But it definitely changed me. And after a while, I just felt that I couldn't even done that, you can stop. And then I had probably another year later, I had a tricky situation with another colleague. And I was like, well, I know what to do this time. So I started praying blessings on her really quickly. And it changed everything. So it changed our relationship. It made our relationship better. She did also then resign and go and get another job. And I was like, don't that happy with me? So what I've learned is you can quickly forgive, and you definitely have to. And I have forgiven my colleagues. I've worked fairly hard to forgive them, but sometimes you have to go the extra mile and you have to actively do something, because our hearts and our minds get cross and we don't like it when people are bad to us. And praying blessings over people is a really good way to get your mind used to the fact that you've forgiven them, and I think it breaks something spiritually, I think it does a thing. So, that is the end. Hello, young people. My application would be, if you are in a position where someone has done something really awful to you, I would have a go at working through it. I would pray, seek God's help. I would talk to friends, like Christian friends who you're close to, and trust to support you, because it is a process, it's not quick. And I would say be prepared to do the work, because it is worth it. Okay. I'm done.